It really comes down to, investing in leader development. And yes, there's a cost to that, but there's also things that don't cost a bunch, right? When I was with San Diego, we were pretty budget strapped. And so getting, funding to pay for, leader development training, staff rides, whatever, we were able to find ways to do that. But more times than not, some of it was, hey, listen, you can do a lot to developing yourself by reading. Certainly that's something. But I look at what's on YouTube sometimes. You plug in leadership, military leadership, whatever it is, and man, there's some really inspiring, videos. But I really think that it's up to the individual to pursue that.
The First Responder Liaison Network is proud to present to you the Kitchen Table Podcast. Join us as we explore leadership from perspectives around the globe, from firefighters to fire chiefs, civilians to CEOs. Our conversations have one simple goal: build more leaders.
Good afternoon and welcome everybody to episode 78 of The Kitchen Table. On the show today, we welcome a Fire Chief Brian Fennessy of Orange County Fire Authority. And the leadership topic of the day is the leadership journey. As the Fire Chief of the Orange County Fire Authority, Brian Fennessy leads more than 1,800 firefighters and non-sworn personnel who collectively serve 2 million residents across 23 cities and unincorporated county. Chief Fennessy began his career in 1978 with the U.S. Department of Agriculture's United States Forest Service and the U.S. Department of Interior's Bureau of Land Management, working as a hotshot crew member and ultimately crew superintendent. In 1990, Chief Fennessy joined the San Diego Fire Rescue Department and ultimately became chief of department in 2015. In 2018, he was appointed to fire chief of the Orange County Fire Authority. Good afternoon, Chief. How are you today?
I'm doing great. Thank you. Look, man, I even dressed up for you.
I appreciate it.
I'm just kidding, man. I'm not normal. I don't want people to think I normally dress like this for work, but there was actually a funeral service. I just came back from a fire chief,
Oh
passed
no.
away a few weeks ago. He had just retired and was at the beach and had sounds like sudden cardiac arrest. And so, yeah, his services were this morning. But
Yeah.
yeah,
Well, heart goes out
we
to
go
the
to too
family.
many of those, right?
We do. Unfortunately, we do. And unfortunately, not to go down that path, but I was just on the phone with a buddy of mine up here and just last weekend over at the Seattle Fire Department. Another member,
Oh,
same thing. Yeah. Still on the job.
wow.
But yeah, we do unfortunately have too many of these.
It's true. I mean, the what it does to us, right? I mean, I'm sure you've heard it, and I know others hear it all the time from sometimes the public or even our elected officials that say, wow, you guys get to retire at such a young age. What they don't realize, and I try to remind them, is that, firefighters don't historically have long retirements. We tend to pass away sooner than the general population.
Population.
So,
Agreed. We don't take things for granted, and we move forward, and we, yeah, it's oh, what a way to start the show. I might cut some of that
that's all
part
right, man.
out.
On a brighter note,
Yeah, it's on a brighter note. Well,
I've been
before we
looking
get,
forward to it.
yeah, I
Thank you.
appreciate it. Thanks for taking up the leadership challenge of Chief Chris Tubbs. And Chief Tubbs actually was served as a chief up here, and ironically enough, listeners know this, but Chief Tubbs was a former fire chief of Mercer Island Fire Department, who years and many years later is now part of the department that I work
Right.
for. So it's interesting how that all comes about.
Oh,
Bef
no kidding.
yeah,
Wow. Yeah,
yeah,
I
it's
know. I knew he was from the Pacific Northwest. That's what a great coincidence.
very, very much so, very much so. And the funny thing was that I hadn't met Chief Tubbs even prior to doing the show. And so on the show, we had talked about
Oh,
this and the
wow.
irony behind all that, the coincidence about all
Yeah,
that.
very cool.
Yeah. So before we talk about this leadership journey, because this is going to be an awesome conversation about the journey that leadership is, right? Because it's not an end goal, it's not something you obtained, it's just, what you become along the way. Would you mind sharing a little bit about Chief Fantasy before we just dive right in?
Yeah, you bet. I got my, well, I'll back up a little bit. I grew up in Southern California, I was raised in Altadena. Altadena is now kind of a well-known place given the fires that we had here and back in January. But I was not a great student. Big family, had another four brothers or so. They all excelled, in school or did well. I did not. I think I was out probably having too much fun, probably wasn't as mature as I needed to be. And lo and behold, I become 18 years old. And my dad, being former Navy, he was, World War II, part of the Greatest Generation, and led his leadership style was very much, you do what I say, and he wasn't very emotional and all those sorts of things. And come 18 is like, well, look, if you're not working, if you're not going to school, you haven't enlisted in the military, well, you're not going to live here. It was like, I remember, it was like, well, wait a minute, I've been living at home for 18 years. Like, no, that's not the way this works. You will do one of those things. And as I said, school was not really an option. In retrospect, I kind of wish I had gone into the service, but instead, I went down to the unemployment office in Pasadena, and it was there that one of the employees asked about the fire service. Said, what do you think about maybe becoming a firefighter? Hadn't really thought about it, although I had uncles that, were LA firefighters. So he told me to show up at the Ranger Station in La Cañada, Flint Ridge, the Oak Grove Ranger Station. They would issue me some boots and put me through some training, and I could be a firefighter.
Wow.
So that Monday, I go down there, and sure enough, it's a Forest Service station, and they tell me I'm going to be on this crew and put me through 32 hours of, back then, this was 1978, the training, and next thing I know, I'm off with this crew. Never really been out of the LA area extensively or anything like that, and I was traveling all over the West, going to fires. And it was something I felt like I was good at for the first time in my life, swinging a tool. I mean, I had kind of, I don't know, at the time they seemed like ha high aspirations.
Absolutely.
My aspirations as an 18-year-old, firefighter swinging a Pulaski on a hotshot crew is, I want to run that chainsaw up front.
Absolutely. Yeah.
That's the tool I want to, I want to run that. That
Yeah.
was my goal.
Yeah.
And I got to do that. And I got to tell you, after, I did 13 years with the U.S. Forest Service and the Bureau of Land Management, and left as a helicopter crew superintendent, where we ran 25 firefighters on the crew. And I was 24 years old when I was made a hot shot foreman. Now they call them hot shot captains. And I look at 24-year-olds today. I look at my own family, brothers, daughters, sons at 24. I mean, hard to imagine that at 24, somebody allowed me to supervise a module of 10 hotshots. So whether I recognized it, and I didn't at the time, the leadership journey really kind of started, back then, and a lot of mistakes along the way,
Sure.
as well as successes. But yeah, that's how I started. Like you said, 30 years, nearly 30 with San Diego. I'm in my 8th year here, and it has been a journey. And I've learned so much, and I'm continuing to learn a lot. Part of who I am, my kids are largely grown. Man, I am way out of kilter when it comes to work-life balance. It's just the way I'm wired. It was ADD as a kid, and my wife kind of, has accepted that a long time ago. And so I don't recommend, my work-life balance to anybody that's watching this show.
Sure.
But it's better than other things,
It
right?
is. It is. Well, it's the passion behind it, right? Because you're the things that you do, right, is to benefit and to better your community, your fire department, the leaders that work with you and for you and beside you. I'm here doing this podcast on my off. Got off, at 8 o'clock this morning. I'm off duty right now doing this, and
Yeah.
it's we could be doing other things, right? And
Right.
so.
But and that's the thing, right? It's not only enjoy it, I'm getting, obviously I'm in the twilight of my career, and people ask all the time, hey, when you're retiring? And my typical answer is, I don't know, 2, 3 years. It used to
Yeah.
be 4 or 5 years. I really don't know.
Yeah.
Because, well, part of me doesn't want to be that guy that, '70s, '80s or something, the crews are like, man, somebody needs to tell grandpa it's time to freaking retire. I don't want to be
Yeah,
that guy.
absolutely.
But at the same time, man, I still think I have something to
Yeah.
offer. I don't have a lot of, I don't golf. I don't do some of these things that maybe I'll get into in retirement, but I don't know, Berlin. As long as
Yeah.
I feel like I'm
As long as
contributing.
you're contributing, you're effective, and people are still learning from you and want you to be around. I mean, why leave, right? I mean, how many times have we seen institutional knowledge, we'll say experience, walk out the door, and we didn't have a chance to say, hold on a minute, like, can we take a little bit more from you? So as long as you're giving back, I mean, that's what counts.
Well, how many of those guys, right? They come back a year or two and they go, man, I retired too soon. I should have stuck with it. You can only golf or fish so much, whatever it is, right? And now all of a sudden you look and they're working for somebody else. It's like, man,
Yeah,
you could have
true.
stayed,
Could have
you know?
stayed. Could have stayed. Yeah. So talk about leadership today and anything we could have talked about. You wanted to talk about leadership being a journey. And for all of us as leaders, as firefighters and in any industry, talk about the importance of just recognizing that our paths, it's a journey and it's not an end goal to get there, whatever there is.
Yeah, it's so true. I think, I recognized a long time ago, and I'm not that smart to recognize things necessarily by myself, but in over time and conversations with others, is that I really came to realize that, especially when it came to fire chiefs and other levels of chief officers that, let's say, aren't part of the civil service exam where there's very tight criteria, we've relied upon luck. Right. I think people, a lot of people will remember that good chief or whatever it is, right? And many times they were lucky because these were people that likely, developed themselves or got experience and understood what it meant to lead an organization and to have people follow and vision and all those things. Others, did not get that same thing. And so we remember the quote unquote bad chief, right? Or whatever. And it really comes down to investing in leader development. And yes, there's a cost to that, but there's also things that don't cost a bunch, right? When I was with San Diego, we were pretty budget strapped. And so getting, funding to pay for, leader development training, staff rides, whatever, we were able to find ways to do that. But more times than not, some of it was, hey, listen, you can do a lot to developing yourself by reading. Certainly that's something, but I look at what's on YouTube. Sometimes you plug in leadership, military leadership, whatever it is, and man, there's some really inspiring, videos. But I really think that it's up to the individual to pursue that. I mean, I'm still trying all these years. I'm not a perfect leader, but I'll tell you what, I try really hard, and I learn or try to learn from my mistake, do a lot of self-reflection. Well, why did that, when so-and-so said something, why did that irritate me? And really kind of dig into that. Is that my ego that's talking? Is that, what is that? Right. And I think one has to be honest with themselves, truly honest with themselves, if they're going to grow. And you have to work on it. I mean, you just do. And to your point, Berlin, I don't think it's ever over. I think I'll continually be doing it. Watch out for the guy that says, oh man, I made it. I'm
I
there.
know.
I got it.
Absolutely. And I got
Right.
what, right? I made it to what? I mean, because there is no, even the greatest of greatest in any industry, whether it be a championship, whatever the pinnacle of someone's, ultimate award is those ones that are sustainable. They keep going. It's, they don't, they keep going. Right. And that's what it's all about. You
Totally agree.
mentioned something super important. You said sometimes, we get lucky, but some departments don't. For example, they're intentional, right? You
That's
sent me
right.
over the website and I looked over the website very extensively, watched some of those videos from the OCFA. There's an Orange County Fire Way, right? And there's those documents. I read through some of those documents. I read over the doctrine. I saw,
Yep.
all that stuff. So, Chief, what is that? Because it looks like to me that there's no luck in your department because you were intentional about, setting the way, if you will. I know you talked about mission-driven culture, intent-based culture. There's intent behind that, and you were, and correct me if I'm wrong, you were intentional about making sure that you and your department weren't lucky to have great leaders. You put money
Sure.
behind it. So talk about all that.
Yeah, very much so. And yeah, I've got the OCFA way. It's all
There it
tabbed up
is.
on my desk, and our doctrine, as much as was engaged in working through the development of it, man, it's that important that it sits on my desk as a reminder or something to look at. But even like I say, even back in San Diego, prior to becoming the fire chief in 2015 in San Diego, I was the number two, like I said, for about 6 years. And prior to that, I was, a three bugle chief for a few years and on and on. And I think what really struck me was, how paramilitary were really didn't allow for a lot of independent thinking, right? Or people were afraid to step outside the rules, the policies, quite frankly, for fear of discipline more than anything else. And I saw that play out on large, disasters and emergencies where many times firefighters and the supervisor, others really understood and knew what they needed to do. But these things may have been outside of policy and, wouldn't take those steps, which meant the public then suffered as a result. And, had a lot of conversations at the kitchen table with a lot of other firefighters. I think I was a captain at the time. And it really came to light over one incident where I really got focused is had a guy, and you'll appreciate this. We had engine crew in a very, very busy part of the city. Midday, I don't know, around lunchtime maybe, and they get dispatched to a medical aid, I don't know, a few miles from the station. So they pull onto the main thoroughfare, four or five lane, street and, busy commercial area, and they're driving down the street. And the policy is, man, you do not deviate from, I mean, you get toned out and you're on this call. You don't jump anything else. This is where you go. What if you get an accident? We'll leave the firefighter behind, but you continue that. I mean, this was ingrained in us from, academy on. Well, there's a rolling down the road off the left, a block probably away, as they're heading a big, huge column of black smoke. And, the captain was like, man, and do I turn or do I go to this, continue on this incident? As they got closer, there's people now in the street waving, hey, go this way, blah, blah, blah. And there was some construction going on. They thought, they could see an apartment building behind it. They thought this was really going to be a big deal. So he took that sense of, man, I'll take whatever's coming. I got to make that left. Made the left, made another right, came around the corner, and it was one of those giant construction dumpsters that was on fire. It was not apartment building. And he said his heart just sank because, it wasn't about leaving that medical aid because somebody else might have needed help. It was, oh God, what kind of trouble am I going to be in now? And it caused a lot of debate, throughout the department because now he's facing discipline. And ultimately, he was disciplined. And that kind of perpetuated the conversation is like, hey, well, wait a minute. Management always tells us we're empowered to make decisions and all this and that. But there's a camp of us that was like, man, he made the right decision. He had a game time decision. He saw it, he tasted it, he smelled it. If we're really going to allow, our supervisors or leaders to make the, man, you've got to do that. And he made a great decision. Others are like, oh no, what if the medical aid had been this or this or this? Well, the fact is it wasn't cardiac arrest. It wasn't anything like that. So it came down to this debate is, do we really trust our people to make it? We train them very well. We equip them well. And so it came down to leader philosophy and that sort of thing. And I got my boss to agree to have a company called Mission Centered Solutions come in, MCS. They had been delivering experiential leader development training to the U.S. Forest Service, the BLM. They started with smoke jumpers, hotshot crews, because they knew these are the ones with the, cultures, these subcultures that were very, very strong. And if there was going to be called BS, it would come out of this, right? And it was right after the South Canyon fires in 1994, where, firefighters, the hotshots were killed and they were overrun. Some people know it as Storm King Mountain, but South Canyon was the name of the fire. Caused a lot of change, investigations, looking at causal factors, human factors. Nobody had ever really looked at human factors before. And highly successful. And we thought, God, man, I wonder if that translates to the structure fire world. So we entered into a relationship with this company. They came and did some courses for us. Overwhelming leader development. I mean, half of it or more was actually in the field. It was like, man, we got to do more of this and more of this. And so And we did that for about 6, 7 years. In fact, we weaved it into the promotional process. If you wanted to take the captain's exam, you had to have this course, this course, this course, and also L380, the leader development. For battalion chief, you needed to have the next level. So it kind of forced people that really maybe weren't interested in taking that class to go. And ultimately, when they'd get done with it, they'd say, man, I wish I had that 20 years ago.
Yes.
You know, but we never really invested. We had a lot of veterans back when I started. Some World War II remaining, Korea, certainly some Vietnam veterans. So there were military folks that you could learn from. But we had a lot that weren't that great, weren't very good leaders. And there's a lot to learn from a bad leader,
absolutely,
right?
absolutely.
Beyond just, I don't want to be like that.
Yep.
So that really kind of started the journey. And by the time I left San Diego, we pushed the mission-driven culture initiative out. So coming to Orange County, I thought, well, you know, better, you know, more resources, places larger, we have more things, more people, but pretty well resourced fire department. And Ray from the very beginning says, man, we're going to go down this path. And there were some problems here when I got here, some big public problems that needed to be addressed. But a lot of it really came down to culture. And I think you see it everywhere, right, in the fire service. The culture looks really close. I came from that funeral today, right? Or somebody gets hurt real bad and they're at the hospital. Man, everybody comes together. Somebody gets the families and we talk about the fire service family and this and that. But do you see that outside of those?
Right.
Sometimes you do, you know, with organizations pulling together and those sorts of things, but it comes back to culture. And I really felt like, man, this was an opportunity. We're losing, I don't know, 50 to 100 firefighters a year to retirement. At the same time, we're bringing in 50 to 100 firefighters a year. Now's the time to approach the culture and not just talk about it, but demonstrate it and learn. How do we put these things that we know, that you and I know, Berlin, are good philosophically? How do we put those on paper? How do we train those? So we did. We impaneled a group of folks for the OCFA way, a bunch of different ranks.
Nice.
Professional staff, and gave them the space to really talk about who we are. The OCFA is who we are. The organizational doctrine is how we make decisions.
Yeah.
And that takes buy-in, right?
I was just going to ask my next question. I'm curious, with such a large department, you know, my department that I work for is nowhere near the size of Orange County, but what was the buy-in like? You know, because I want to get into another question. We should go backwards about leader development. But what was the buy-in like? Was it by and large like many, or was there pushback? How do you navigate to say, you know what, we're going to start into this new culture, we'll say, of the mission driven and, you know, ensuring that everyone's on the same page, is on the same path, has the same objective, if you will?
Yeah, it's, you know, going back to San Diego, you know, we basically, you know, softened the earth a bit by, you know, all those years of providing leader development training. So pushing out the mission-driven culture initiative wasn't too hard, right? Because we had buy-in. We had buy-in that, hey, this is good. And buy-in for firefighters, you know, is word of mouth.
Yeah.
Your buddy tells you, hey, man, I went to this thing. You got to go to this, man. This
Absolutely.
Is good. You're likely going to go to that, or you're going to try to do that. So it had to be that. And we had that in San Diego.
That's awesome.
Here, a little bit different, right? Didn't have 10 years of kind of grooming this. I'm the external guy coming in as the fire chief. There weren't any internal candidates. Nobody was prepared and nobody was interested, which is a whole nother problem that needed to be addressed. But now how do you get this guy, right? I'm about 100 miles, well, maybe not 100 miles, maybe 60 miles north of San Diego, 60, 70 miles. You still got to earn that trust from these guys, right?
Absolutely.
And so part of my plan was, man, I was going to visit 100 stations my first 100 days, you know, for lunch or dinner, whatever. And I think I got to 60 something, man. I never got there. Because in the beginning, the workload's not too tough because you're still the new guy and you're kind of being brought up to speed. And so common themes start to come out of that. When you're having dinner, and I think what's different today than when I started, man, when I started probably through the 90s, certainly the 80s, 90s, maybe in the, didn't care whether I saw a chief at all. The battalion chief would come by, drop off the mail, we'd yuck it up, maybe see him. But if the fire chief or anybody, any of his executive staff showed up, man, I couldn't care less, right? I mean, they were just people that showed up at incidents, and then a day later you'd hear that they complained because your gloves were off or something. As far as we were concerned, man, if I never saw a fire chief or the staff, that was fine with us, right?
Right.
Now they want to see you.
That's
they
awesome.
want you to come by the station.
Yeah,
they want you they want to and so they're more open.
Yeah.
And a station visit's probably much like it is at yours. You know, when the chief comes, everybody's wearing their uniform, everybody's kind of polite, the place is clean, and when you're talking to them, you can tell there's this, you know, this tent, you know, that until, you know, that the water breaks, right? Until you start talking about things and wanting to hear what's not. Once somebody starts talking about what could be better, whatever, man, the floodgates open.
Yes.
Now we're having a real conversation.
Yeah.
And you know firefighters, right? Man, we'll sniff out a phony in a freaking
heart. Yeah, absolutely.
Right? We're looking for it.
Yeah.
Right. When somebody gets promoted, how are they gonna change now?
Yeah.
Right. I mean,
Yeah.
We're just hypersensitive to that.
Yeah.
So A, you better be genuine. You know, you better, because
sure.
they'll sniff it out if you're not, if you're just trying to sell something. And so, you know, I'd hear, listen to them, and then I'd share a little bit about mission-driven culture, and you'd see a lot of nodding heads. Because I think when you talk about it, right, people go, well, man, yeah, no, that's good. No, that's what we should. It's really easy to get people on board with. But then what does it look like when you take it down to how do you train that? How do you have those discussions? How do you and I tend to, because getting a degree in what right looks like isn't difficult, but you're still kind of fighting early on that trust. Is this guy just blowing smoke?
Sure.
What? And so initially, you know, I ended up meeting with all the chief officers and their group and sharing kind of where I wanted to go. Did it all couple days of all everybody within the organization that could show up at the auditorium or whatever. And I'd spend a couple hours sharing what mission-driven culture is, this and that. And people like then it was time to put the work in, right? In the OCFA way, you know, who we are, that was actually done by a fire chief, Chip Prather, that retired here, I want to say in 2008-ish, 2009-ish. And he was the chief here for about 10 years. Really highly regarded. I remember Chip. I still see Chip to this day, long retired, obviously. And it was a takeoff from Brunicini's The Phoenix Way. Everybody knew Alan Brunicini, right? And so back in the day, they were friends, and people would go visit Bruno, and they'd hear about and see the Phoenix Way, and they wanted to create, you know, the Orange County Way.
Yeah.
A lot of departments did that. You know how we are, man. We steal each other's stuff all the
Absolutely,
time.
Absolutely, we
do. Nothing wrong with that,
Well, I
right?
mean, right. If it works, why not, right?
Yeah. And so, but when I went through it, and the way I got it, was my first day, and the interim fire chief, I was taken over from, because there was about a 6-month period where the last chief was gone, and then there was this interim. He was way more organized than me, Berlin, man. He had like a big binder. He says, man, look, here's your first day. Here's your first week. Here's the me. I mean, it was like dialed. And I'm thinking, man, that's not the way I roll. And I my life is chaos, man. I'm not that organized. But in the file fold, there was this OCFA way. And I said, what is this? And I started reading it. I go, man, this is unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
This is who the organization is. And it really was back then. Well, they'd hired so many people over the years he was gone that many of the people here had never heard of it, but the old timers did.
Yeah.
So when I met with the old timers one-on-one, not the old timers, the chiefs were the coming in, I put the book purposely on the front of my desk to see if any of them would notice it. And sure enough, some of the, you know, battalions, the folks that have been on a while, battalions, they go, hey, where'd you get that? I said, well, I found, tell me about it. And they would tell me what it meant to them. And some of them were new firefighters back in the day, but it obviously meant a lot to them, and talking about values and principles and who we are. And there was buy-in back then.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, then they would lead to tell you how that was all been lost, and boy, wouldn't it be great to get back there again.
Yeah.
And so there were a lot of these things that kind of led up to it. And the final step really was, you know, when we got, you know, organizational buy-in that this is where we want to go, especially with the doctrine, which took probably a year and a half or better to get done. The division chiefs wanted to own that. And kind of the way we're structured, there's myself, I've got two deputies, and then there's a layer of assistant chiefs, like the EMS chief, the human resources chief, you know, that kind of level. And below that, there are division chiefs. And what the division chiefs are, they're geographic divisions within that, two or three battalions may be within a division. But because we provide service for so many cities, I can't get to 23 cities in the board supervisor meeting every week. So they are really kind of the fire chief for multiple cities or perhaps one large city. Anyways, these are the guys that run in the day-to-day business along with the battalion chiefs. Well, the division chiefs wanted to own this. And it was one of those things like, you can own this, and I'll come in and kind of provide a little sidebar, make sure we're kind of going the way with it. We had MCS come in and facilitate it, so nobody's off the hook. But the big piece was, when it's all said and done, you all got to be willing to hold yourselves accountable to it. Meaning, Berlin, if you're a division chief and I'm a division chief, and you do or say something that maybe is not what we all agreed to in this, I'm going to call you out. And not call you out, but hey, Berlin, man, what happened to the, hey, man, no surprises or whatever the thing. Oh, man, yeah, no. Because there's nothing better than peer accountability.
Absolutely.
You calling me and my shits a whole lot. I'm going to listen to that a lot more than I am my boss giving me crap. I mean, we have a
Absolutely.
relationship and we're, so that was really what did it. And then pushing it out, and then you saw some of the videos and whatever, it was really largely praised. Because again, it goes back to, we've seen, it's mostly focused on operations, right? But there are some other, there are things in there that translate to professional staff work, whatever. You just don't have the time compression that maybe an emergency does, right? And the last thing we want to see, especially in operations, is a supervisor or a firefighter at any level not doing what they know is the right thing to do. And there's time compression now, and they don't do it for fear of, knows what,
Whatever.
reprisal, whatever it is. So I tell people, no, I expect you to step outside of policy, and that freaks them out, right? When I tell other chiefs that, no, I expect my people to break policy, and they're like, whoa, 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 whoa. And I got to back up and say, no. Listen, the rules are important. Rules are important, but the business we're in is so dynamic, you can't have a rule for everything, every situation. And especially when there's time compression, if something needs to happen right now, and that individual or that crew or whatever needs to know, even if it's outside of policy, they need to do that. There's time later to talk about, why did you do that? It doesn't mean you just assign yourself to every first alarm because you think that's how some people take it, though, right? Like,
Absolutely.
well,
Oh
because
yeah. Oh yeah.
you
We
first did
like to
it.
interpret. We like to interpret.
Especially San Diego, they're like, oh man, this mission-driven culture thing's good, man. I could just, and we did. We had some people jumping calls. It was like, listen,
There's
that's
a
not.
happy medium somewhere in there, right?
Well, and there has to be account. What people don't realize, when you're giving them that much, there's still
There's
accountability.
still accountability.
And we tell them, look, you're gonna get asked. So, okay, I get why did you make the decisions you made?
Absolutely.
And if they have, I mean, good reason. Well, I did this because I noticed this. I could tell that if this, who are we to second guess? I
Yes.
wasn't there. And you'll lose these people quick, right? You lose people, man. I know in my heart I did the right thing. And now I'm getting a week on the beach because I violated,
Yeah.
all that. I mean, that is toxic.
Well, so trust sounds like trust and empowerment is goes without saying is obviously important in leadership. But going back even just a little bit, it's kind of a rhetorical when I say this, but it sounds like leadership development or leader development is a requirement. Meaning, like you had talked about, like leadership courses started to become a part of the promotional process. And then you had people starting to willingly say, okay, I want to go to that course. And they were just word of mouth. It was like, hey, I went through this because of the promotional exam coming up. I don't know if you're thinking about taking the promotional exam, but it was a great course, great curriculum. You should go through it. But it started to become a culture where developing yourself as a leader is required. And I say that simply because historically or traditionally in the fire service, it's not, right? We do a lot of, tactics training, hard skills of the job, all that. But leadership development is not. But it sounds like in where at OCFA and kind of the organizations that you grew up, it kind of is now. I mean, that's what you guys are trying to do, and that's different.
It is. It's adult learning, right? I mean, so, but you're right. I mean, we've got the truck academy, we've got the this, we've got the that, but if we're not developing our leaders from the very beginning, right, from the time they come into the academy and then really focusing as they start to move towards a company officer position. I mean, you think about it, right? I think about when I became a captain. I took an exam, got notified on a Friday, hey, congratulations, you and 20 others are going to be captains. You're going here. Man, now they're trusting me with a district to protect, right? And all the people within it. $1 million plus fire engine, three other firefighters. I mean, the station, I mean, a huge responsibility. And what have they done to prepare me for that? From a leader, And so, like, all, I mean, we're all human. We're going to make a bunch of mistakes before we figure it out, if we figure it out, right? And so, I go back to, how, really the kind of what happened to me. Here I am in the mid to late 80s running crews all over the West. And my leadership style, Berlin, was, man, yelling, screaming, boot in the butt, just because that was the leadership model I grew up in. And I respond to that leadership model, man. I mean, you'd be seen and not heard and blah, blah, blah. I'm okay with that. And I was going, promoting up because of that. So I was on a fire up in Idaho, somewhere near the Forks of the Salmon, and I'm lining out my crew, my 10 guys, right? And I'm telling them, this is what you're going to do, and you're going to do it, and blah, blah, blah. And I'm giving them the business. It was kind of loud because the river is running through there. When I'm done, I hear this whistle from up on the hill, and I look up, and it's this crew superintendent that was very well known nationally. He's one of those people, man, that was like, if he looked at you in chow line and nodded or said hello or good morning, man, that was a big deal. I mean, he was one of those guys that says, I'm still in my 20s, right? And it's like, man, if he talks to me, man, it was just a big deal. And now this guy's on the side of the hill and he's waving me up. And so I go up the hill and, take off my pack. And I'm saying, he's already got his pack off. He'd been watching this whole thing. And I forget exactly what we talked about, but it really had to do with, hey, if you want people to do, something for you, a task or whatever, there are other ways of getting people to do that for you. Because I think he asked, hey, how do you think that thing that went down there? I said, oh man, I thought it went great, man. I lined him out, told him what to do, told him what was going to happen after. I thought it was okay. And he subtly says, well, there's other ways of getting people to do things you need them to do. And for me, I remember thinking, what the hell's he talking about? What other way, right? And he reached his pack, and he was known to be a big reader, right? And again, this back in the mid 80s, maybe late 80s, and he pulled this book out of his pack, this old book, and it was Sun Tzu, The Art of Leadership, right? Or The Art of War. And
Amazing.
I'm like, and he's like, hey, listen, we're going to see each other at some fire somewhere else, because the crew's all, we traveled all over the West. He goes, I'd like you to read this, and when I see you next, we're going to talk about it. I'm like, oh man, not only to talk to this guy, now he gave me a homework assignment. He's gonna talk to me later. I didn't know Sun Tzu, Art of War. Man, will you open if you, anybody's ever read that, right? That's not an easy read. And I'm like, what the hell is this? And what
Especially
am
in
I?
your 20s,
Right. And
right?
I'm gonna read it because I don't want to be, what you're seeing later in the season, whether it's a week or a month later. And he asked me about it. I better have freaking read it. And so I read it a bunch of times and still never really got it. But it opened the door to more conversations with him, who introduced me to other people. We didn't use mentorship. I'm a mentee, or you're my mentor. And now you hear that all the time. Nobody used those words. But I was introduced to people and started to learn different things and observe how other people led. And again, the other leaders that didn't lead so well, but nothing really formal until probably, well into my, as a captain with San Diego Fire. But same time, following what the military, has done through tactical decision games, through staff rights. I mean, there are so many things, and they take, the Marines take somebody that's just even into boot camp, and they get some element of leadership development, leader development, and they get it throughout their career. It's not a choice. You're getting it. Why shouldn't the fire service
I agreed.
be
Agreed.
like that,
100%.
right? Otherwise, you get what you get.
Talk about
And
luck, right? You talk about luck earlier. You either get lucky or you don't. So let me ask a question, Chief. I just want your thoughts on it. What would the fire service look like across the American Fire Service, if leadership development became a requirement, regardless of whether it be through coming up through the ranks, a promotional process, in a fire academy, even if you're brand new, what would the fire service look like in 30 years if it started today, where leadership development curriculum is there?
Well, I think it would affect everything. I mean, probably one of the things it affects is you probably need smaller human resources departments, right? you may not need
the cause and effect, right?
Right, all the crazy things firefighters do, right? And so I laughed because I was one of those firefighters that, there's a little paper in my file back in the day, man. I had a little bit too much fun, right? I mean, come on.
You're human. We're all human, right?
Right. When you think it or you put it in that way, that's a great question. I think, your injuries perhaps, decrease, your line of duty deaths, maybe even things like the, behavioral health that we're all dealing with, mental health stuff. Because I think, as a part of it, and you've been around and you've talked to, a lot of leaders too, if somebody's really practicing, leadership, philosophies and those sorts of things, A, they normally don't carry a big ego with them, right? I mean, and for me, you point me to a big ego, I'll point you to somebody that's got some insecurities. It's connected. Right.
100%.
I feel insecure because now they're the big bad leader. They're the big. And so they overdo it. Well, that's somebody that's, got some insecurities there. I want to share with people, the journey or some of those things if they're interested. And what I love now at this part of my career is seeing those that I've quote unquote mentored. We didn't call it that, but that have been successful moving up. I'm watching them do the same things. And those people are now becoming successful. Right. It's communicable, just like complaining, right? You're on a crew where everybody bitches and complains and all that, man. It's just culture. You're on another crew and everybody's pumped up, ready to go. Man, it's a whole different feeling.
Yes, it is.
And they tend to gravitate towards each other. I got to think, the world, would be a lot better. Public safety, certainly would. But I think people that are truly practicing good, leadership values and principles, there are people that you can trust. There are people in our business, man, you're going into war with some of these people that are on that rig with you, right? You're hanging it all out there with these people, and you want to know. It's easy to say, well, you got mine, I got yours. But if that's not the way people operate, except in that environment, you don't know for sure that they're going to be there. You're going to trust that they're being trained. They're going to trust they're going to be vulnerable with you as they burn them in.
Yeah.
I'm a little under the weather today, man. Can you, take that, drop off position, or can you take this on the deal? And for me, it's transparency. It's continued improvement. It's,
love it.
Being
love
open it. To change, continuing to learn. Man, I'm still going to staff rides, military staff rides, and some of those things for my own self, right? I'm still reading what I can, but you got to be. Man, you gotta want it. Want to try to be better, understanding that you're never gonna get it completely or perfectly.
Yeah. And there you go. It's being okay with that too, right? Whatever path that you take, know that you're gonna have a misstep, you're gonna fail, you're gonna say, you know what, I wish I wouldn't have done that, but it's all experience. And then you could also mentor somebody else and say, you know what, I went through this, and maybe you should take a different avenue based on this experience, because otherwise you don't have it.
And being vulnerable, right? Just because I'm the fire chief don't mean I'm the smartest guy in the room, man. Yeah. I'm far from that. I'm still that same knuckle dragger I was. They just gave me another badge that says these are your... So I try to surround myself with really smart people. If they're smarter than me, that's even better.
Yeah.
And here, I needed some people that knew the culture and the history and those sorts of things. And so gaining that trust, takes a little bit of time. For them to see you're not in it for yourself, that you truly are, wanting to, that you do love it. But it's not just all talk. Yeah. That takes a while, because we are, as firefighters, somewhat cynical, man.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. Well, taking this to like like a tangible piece now too, because you had talked about something as simple as, not even want to say simple, but something as basic as in terms of like getting a book from a mentor, not even a mentor, but an individual gave you a book in your 20s.
Yeah.
And you didn't want to let this individual down. You took it upon yourself to read it. We talked about wanting it, even up to you now as the fire chief, continuously still wanting to learn, still wanting and bettering yourself. So if you're going to talk to some groups and say, along your leadership journey, whether you have 30 years left in your career or 3 months left in your career, what do you suggest these individuals do to make sure they're on this path of a journey and they don't stop learning, because it never stops? From a new firefighter to a company officer, and then talking to also a chief officer, what's something tangible that you would recommend to those groups to do?
I share with the BC Academy and the Captain Academy, anybody else, is really to be authentic. You know, to me, authenticity, man, is really everything, right? And you've got to, because we all know who you are, right? You could talk a big game, but, you know, if you've been on the crew, you know, for a year or so, you're not going to fool us. And what do we do when somebody gets promoted to captain? We start watching them. Is he going to change? He or she going to change? Are they now going to be the smartest one in the room? And we see it even more so when somebody, you know, becomes a battalion chief or a chief officer. All right, let's see. And we used to mess with people, right? We used to purposely do stuff to see if they, you know, had changed. And the good ones, you know, good ones would be the ones like, listen, you clowns, you know, I know you're going to be testing me today. We're not going to play that today. You know, well, we did when you were, we're not, that was then, this is now, you know, I don't want to be the chief today. So, you know, behave yourself. So, but, you know, you don't have to change. Right. You've got new duties. You've got new responsibilities. Certainly some of that has to change. But I think we're looking for that. And I think people like to follow the people that they, you know, that they've worked with and they've had, you know, good experiences in the past. So I think authenticity is a big one. Mm-hmm. And I think empathy, and I think empathy came late for me. You know, I mean, when I was riding around the back of that engine, the busiest station in San Diego, I'll be honest, man, I don't think I was the nicest person in the world. I mean, I had a lot of fun there, but we ran a lot of calls, you know, getting up all times of night, dealing with the stuff you would in an urban city. And quite frankly, I don't think I treated a lot of people with the dignity that they deserved, you know, at 2 a.m, the second call out and a heroin overdose, whatever it was. You know, I look back on that and I'm kind of ashamed of that, right? Because now today I'm professing that we need to treat people with dignity and those sorts of things. And I think firefighters today do a much better job than we did back during that era. Sure. But I think empathy kind of comes along. And if you're going to be successful in these positions, you've got to really want to learn about people. What is Joe's family like? Why does Joe have these issues? Does Joe maybe have things going on at home? Is Joe suffering from some PTSD or some other mental thing? And I think as a result of a lot of the mental health, engagement we're seeing throughout the fire service, I think we are getting better at it.
Yeah.
Because it's not so unusual anymore to ask somebody how they're doing, mm-hmm. you know, and have that conversation.
Yeah.
Where 20, 30 years ago and beyond that, man, it was like, man, I'm good.
Yeah.
I'm not sharing nothing with you.
Right.
You know, buddies, I'm not gonna, people, man, are sharing.
Yeah.
And
yeah. It's a good change.
I think there's a tolerance as we start seeing chiefs now from that era become fire chiefs. Man, there's a willingness and an effort to allow that. We have a very robust mental health program here that even extends out to families. And every quarter or so I get a report with our HR director, and there are no names or anything, but it's amazing to me how many people, firefighters, are seeking help for, I mean, a variety of different things. I mean, I am so glad, but you know, 30 years ago, man, it would have been nobody on that list.
I would unfortunately agree. So we've made progress and it's getting better.
And so I think people, you know, chiefs today, and not just the fire chief, but, you know, even captains, anybody that's in a supervisory position, I think it's more important than ever to really know your people and to, even if you don't like each other, whatever, you know, whatever it may be. But I, you know, I've heard, you know, there was a chief in San Antonio, really good guy. He used to talk about, you got to love all your firefighters, even though, you know, even those firefighters that maybe are that small percent that find themselves in trouble all the way. I used to think about that. It's like, man, do I love all my firefighters or just the ones that don't? And I had to kind of come to terms with that. And you have to, because a lot of those people, you know, that sometimes come through the office and maybe are on a last chance agreement, man, they're going through some things in their lives
Sure. Yeah.
That you have to be empathetic to, right?
Yes.
Maybe they get another, maybe not
Agreed.
last chance, but you get another opportunity.
Agreed.
And if it's so bad, they're going to be back anyways.
Yeah.
So I tend to be one that looks at second and sometimes even third chances.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely.
And we've
Or would we,
invested
you
in
know?
people.
Yeah.
We've
Okay,
invested.
I want to lean on something real quick, Chief, as we kind of wind
Sure.
down a little bit here. Is you talked about authenticity and empathy, obviously very important traits. But as you talk about this leadership journey, and you know, we know failures along the way, mistakes happen to all of us. The best of leaders have made decisions throughout their career to get to where they're at. But making those mistakes help shape people as well.
Oh
But
man.
some people, you know, we need to change.
Yeah.
Meaning you talk about, like, you know, going from firefighter, we'll say, to captain or captain to chief, whatever it may be. But being authentic is key. But sometimes we need to change. So we talk about authenticity, being your true self. But sometimes, if let's just go ahead and say it, like, say your true self for the X amount of years, you've been a terrible leader, but you need to change. So that authenticity is it's not so much that it's fake, but it's a recognition that I need to change. So talking about failures and being empathetic, recognizing you might not have been as empathetic as you were, as you should have been and wished you were, we need to change and transform
Yeah,
as
I
leaders.
agree.
But talk about the importance of, like, recognizing, but then also not being ashamed of that, right? Because if you've done 20 years as a terrible leader, and you know, you think you don't want to change because people are going to view you as, oh, now he's got the collars on his, or sorry, the brass on their collars, now they got to change. But no, you need to change. And so can you talk about the challenge of that dynamic, knowing that people need to transform?
It's so hard, right? The fourth
Yes.
fire service, right? I mean, it is, and you're right. I think I have, and I think most people, when they think about it, I've learned more from their failures, you know, than you do from your successes. I know what I don't want to do again, or if I acted like a jerk or whatever, I know I don't want to do that again. I think so much of it still comes down to, you know, really a lot of self-reflection. It's like an AAR, right? You used to come back
Yes.
from a structure fire or something, you know, you'd be all pumped up.
Yep.
Man, we kicked its ass and this and that. And then I'd go back to bed, right, or whatever, and I'd start thinking about when we arrived and what I did. And we did, it's like, man, I should have grabbed the 200-foot line. I ended up with not enough. You start critiquing, you know, your own performance. Well, the same thing, you know, and how you react or behave, you know, around others. You know, should I have said what I said? You know, should I? I mean, how can I be better? How do I become more tolerant? But I don't know if that's just something that comes with age and maturity, because we all know people that have been leadership positions for 10 years, 20 years, 30 years. They're lousy leaders.
Yep.
And quite frankly, it wouldn't have mattered, you know, what you got for them. They were going to be lousy leaders because they just didn't have the ability to see, you know, that Johari window, that blind spot. They have this blind spot that they will never see. You have to be open. I mean, and then you try to help somebody and they just get angry about it, right?
Yeah.
And what's the reaction? Well, I'm not going to help them anymore. I'm just trying to be real and on and on. And who do you invest in, right? And
Right.
I think that's it. I think everybody's worth investing in, certainly right in the beginning. If you start in the fire department, you know what your path is to these, beyond just the courses and the going back to school and all these things. Do I truly want people to listen and to follow me? How do I do that? That can be trained. That the whole, you know, is leadership, you know, learned, or is it natural? I'm of the belief that it can be learned. I'm an
Can be
example of
learned.
that.
Absolutely.
I
As
had to
mine.
learn it, man. I was a horrible leader, thinking that I was leading like I should. But we really need to invest in that. I have such high hopes for the fire service. As I get towards the, or in the twilight of my career, I see so many things around me, young people that are fired up about the job and the community in ways that maybe I wasn't as well. And man, they're just sucking it up. And so we've got to provide opportunities, to teach folks even basic leader development stuff and encourage them and reward them, right? When they do well, and they do something to recognize, so that others see that, wow, that decision really got a lot of attention.
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah.
But then we're always teaching it, always discussing it.
Yeah.
And you can't slip, right? Yeah. There is no slipping. I mean, we all make mistakes, but you can't do something so catastrophic from a leader development wise, especially when it comes to ethics and morals, those sorts of things, because you'll lose them.
Yeah.
Because we're waiting, right? We're waiting for you.
Oh, yeah.
As a firefighter, man, you said
we're
all the
waiting for
things.
It. Yeah.
Wait a minute. I knew it.
Yeah.
I knew it.
Yeah. You know? I totally agree. Well, with that, Chief, give us a book or a class, something that was highly influential to you, something that our listeners can pick up today, be either purchase a book on Amazon or go out and look for this class that was very influential for you in leader development, whether it be a nationwide class, something local California.
Right.
But are there resources out there that you'd recommend people say go take or go do or go read?
One of my, I find myself now reading more. It used to be, leadership stories of, so-and-so, Jack Welch and on. I find those fascinating. Now, I find myself really reading more about human behavior stuff. I find myself trying to, how people think and why they do what they do. There's a couple books. One that probably people have heard of, Team of Teams by
McChrystal,
General Stanley McChrystal.
Yep.
I think he does a really good job of bringing us through history of how we were building cars, and we had, they figured out, you put the screw in, I put the seat in, and all of these things, to the world we now live in, that is not what he says. There's a difference between complicated and complex. And he really spells out the difference of that, right? And he talks about his time in Iraq in the early 2000s as Commander JSOC, and how Al-Qaeda was really kind of kicking our butts in theater, because they were so decentralized, where our military model time, right, was very much centralized.
Agreed.
And that he actually had to take a page out of some of what they were doing. And really what it was getting information, intent. We talk about leaders' intent, those sorts of things, down to the individual soldier, Marine, sailor, whatever it was, so that they knew, in chaos, ambiguity, uncertainty, they knew what the mission was. They knew what the goal was. And over time, I think he said over a number of just a year or two or whatever, all of a sudden their operations just increased exponentially. But it was really the decentralization and pushing decision making down to the forest level. It's easy to talk about that, right?
Yeah.
You hear it all the time. Oh, push it down to the lowest level. That's fine.
Yeah.
But you also got to understand there's risk to that.
Yep.
You're pushing it down a lower level, people are going to make mistakes. And you have to be tolerant of those mistakes and treat them like teachable moments.
Yep.
A lot of people don't have the patience for that. If
Agreed.
I told you, Berlin, man, it's okay, I'm expecting you're going to make some mistakes, blah, 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 and then you do, and then I jump on your ass.
Yeah.
You're going to go, well, he said one thing, and then all of a sudden, I've lost you.
Yeah.
I'm freaking done. The other book called The Invisible Gorilla. It's been a long time since I've read it.
I don't know this one. What's
Yeah,
this?
Man, it's pretty cool. It's a short read, too. It's not real large, but it's it explains a lot of the things, at least for me, and it gives a lot of case examples. We've all seen probably that video where that gorilla, where they're all tossing the ball, or
Yes,
told to follow the ball, and the gorilla goes through.
no
And
one
you
sees
don't.
it yet.
Some people see it and some people don't, right? I'm one of those people who didn't see it,
Yep,
right?
I was as well, yep.
And there it is, plain as day. And so it talks about how your mind works. It explains a lot why, people turn left in front of motorcycles and they tell you, man, I never saw them, even though they got a big light on and they're right there, because they truly didn't see them because of their focus or their mindset or what. I mean, it for me, it kind of gave me some insight as to how mistakes or how things can be made. That
love that.
It's a fascinating book.
I love it. And The Invisible Gorilla.
The Invisible Gorilla,
I'm
man.
Gonna look
I just
that one up.
stumbled across it, and I thought, man, this is
Well, I hadn't heard of that one.
This explains a lot.
And that it just proves that, you know, we can all take something out of any resource, good or bad or indifferent, old or new. I love that. I love that. And I'm going to lean on the McChrystal a little bit because I have some quotes. I pulled it up here because I think you might have been the third or the fourth person to recommend that book.
Oh,
So
wow.
I can
Okay.
easily say on this podcast, that book is the one that's been recommended the most. But something that McChrystal said, and I love it because you talk about empowerment and delegation and decentralizing, you know, power, if you will, is he says the eyes on, hands off approach, which is awesome because, you know, we talk about hands off,
Yeah.
but eyes on is okay. It's okay to be aware of what your
Yeah,
team's
yeah.
doing. But, you know, if you're truly going to delegate and empower others to make good decisions, your hands got to be off, you know, be aware, hands off. And then the other
I
thing that he
love
said,
that.
which was great, was he says, moving from a culture of who needs to know to who doesn't know that we must tell now.
I
And he
love
said
it.
that one was just awesome.
I love it.
It's about
Talks about,
proactive decision making, leadership, and
yep.
not being passive and let's go. I love that.
I do too, man. I mean, he talks about being the gar I think it's the gardener, you know, where you're cultivating, and he's got a couple, I think, a couple TED Talks, you know,
Yes,
for
he does.
investors.
Yes, he does.
That are really good and really entertaining too, right? About his kind of his leadership journey too. But yeah, he's a amazing speaker. I guess he's doing a lot in the corporate world. And we've got a guy here actually who's, I think, a nephew of his or whatever. And so I hope to meet the guy one time. But I've gone back and through that book a number of times and find things that I missed
Absolutely. Yep. As do I.
before,
As
right?
do I. Yep. Yeah. So, all right, Chief. Well, I do want to thank you for your time. Before I let you go, we have to go to the leadership challenge because that's how
Okay.
we're here today. Chief Tubbs challenged you to be the guest on the show, and I'm glad he did. We're able to have this conversation about the leadership journey. Is there someone that you would recommend that we reach out to help further this conversation on leadership?
Yeah, no, that there is. In fact, he's an individual that I look up to as well, and he's got a really interesting story where he didn't really come from operations as we normally would. But it's done an amazing job, and his name is Mark Niemeyer. I don't know if you've talked with Mark, but he's the Boise fire chief,
Oh,
city of
is he really?
fire
Okay.
chief. And
Boise.
Mark is also the president of the Western Fire Chiefs Association.
Did I know that?
And
Okay.
so Mark, I think, is a Meridian before that, before he went to Boise. He's about to retire, so you probably need to get him in the next 2 or 3 months.
All right.
And
Challenge is out.
Yeah, and I can certainly make the introduction, but Mark is seen. I mean, the troops love him. He came in there again with to another fire department that needed some culture adjustment. He's very mission focused. He gets the mission-driven culture stuff, and he lives it. And the troops, you know, love that. I've seen Mark present in ways. Man, I really admire the guy. He's a It's funny, he nominated me for a fire, what was it, career fire chief of the year, I don't know, a couple of years ago with the IFC. I freaking got it. When I found out, I was like, man, who did that to me?
That's
I was like,
awesome.
dude, that's not such a, so, man, come on, really? Well, he just nominated somebody else out in Utah who got it. And it's like, man, Mark's the guy that should be recognizing and he really is, I think, the chief of the year, the decade, or whatever. I think Mark, his honesty, transparency, he's vulnerable, and he's a big dude too. He's a cowboy, so he's not a guy you'd look at and think of, man, he's no soft guy. But man, a guy I really admire, and I think you would love talking with him.
Awesome.
I
Awesome.
think
I
he'd
appreciate it.
give you a perspective that maybe others have not.
Well, that's what it's all about perspective, adding to it, spreading the word, having everyone listen in, tune in, resonate with what they can. So thank you so much. I'll reach out to Chief Niemeyer and let him know he's leadership challenged by Chief Fantasy.
Yeah, man.
Thank you. Before we close, Chief, lasting leadership thoughts you want the listeners to walk away with today?
Well, you know, I think we talked about it. It's, you know, life is a journey, but I think leadership, you know, that is a journey within you. If you're a young firefighter and you've never really, you know, thought much about it, or you think it's not something you need, trust me, if you, even if it's, and how many times have we done this? Man, I just, you know, I'd like to retire as a captain. That's as far as I want to go. That looked like a good job. That's all of our plans, right? I didn't plan on sitting here. Trust me, being the fire chief was the last thing on my mind. That was not a goal that was remotely. Things just kind of happen. But I think it's that journey, you know, the fire service, right? You're in the fire station with four people, eight people, whatever it is, man, it's the relationships you have. Those are the things that are going to bond us, right, forever. If you want, you know, to, you know, move up in your career and have more influence, because that's what leadership is ultimately, right, is influence. And you want that to be positive influence and change people's lives and help, because I think we get into this business because we genuinely want to help people. Well, helping our fellow firefighters and others can be a part of that. I mean, and if you're a department that doesn't have, you know, the resources to put people, you know, to class or bring stuff in, you can still encourage people, you know, to read books. You can go to YouTube. You can go to TED. I mean, there's a number of things online that the folks nowadays more rather glom to, and have those conversations around the kitchen table. You know, doesn't have to always be serious. I mean, very rarely were they serious conversations when I was at the kitchen table.
True.
But, you know, you got somebody that served maybe in the military on your crew or that's passing through on overtime. You're asking them about, you know, how did they, man, we hire a lot of people from the military because, man, when I bring them in, I know, you know, that they, if I ask them, tell me a little bit about your core values. Man, they'll rattle that off. I bring somebody else in that maybe spent 3 years on an ambulance. They may not even know what a value is, and I have to explain to them what that is. I think we have a lot to learn from those that have served in our military and the leadership lessons they've learned along the way as well. I'm thirsty for it, man. I'm hungry, man. I'm like ravenous for anything leadership.
Well, that's what's so inspiring, Chief, because you being the fire chief, and you said early on you got a few years left, but to say at, you know, near the end, you're still hungry. I mean, I think that's what we want and look for in a leader, is someone that's not saying, you know, I'm almost done. It's, yeah, I may be almost done, but I'm still learning. I'm still leading. And, you know, I'm going to continue to bring up others along the way, because although I'm almost retired, I'm, you know, the journey doesn't end.
It's so much fun too, because it takes you in different directions, right? I've been to FDNY and sat through some of the leaders stuff. I mean, I would have never dreamed that again, back in the early 2000s, I'd jump on this. Well, even before that, right? That I'd jump on this journey and it'd lead here. I still love the job. I still love firefighters, man. It's just hard to imagine, I think, being retired. Yeah. So here's the thing to you, Berlin.
Yes.
In 5 years, man, I'm drooling and I'm still, you know, I'm walking with a limp. It's okay to tell me, hey, listen, Brian, it's okay to retire now. And
there you go.
I'll retire.
There you
now.
Go. I'll
Someone's
check up
gonna
on you.
have to tell the old man.
Someone's gonna have to. Someone's gonna have to. I'll reach out to you for sure and check up on you. But I'm sure, obviously, all the people that you're with around you will tell you the same. But as long as you're still enjoying it, you know, don't walk away yet. So
I'm with you, man.
Awesome. Let me close this. Thank you for tuning in today to the Kitchen Table. We truly hope you found this time valuable. We hope we've inspired you to take action, to lead, and to spread the leadership conversation. Until next time, be safe, be intentional, stay curious.